Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Talking Points, the LoveRugbyLeague.com podcast. I'm Dave Parkinson, and along with Adrian Jackson, we're here to talk about the best game in the world. Coming up, we've got our roundup of all the action on the pitch from round 5 of Super League, and we also look at how the first weekend of games in the Championship and Championship 1 panned out. We'll also touch base with the results of the first weekend's fixtures in the NRL, and look forward to all next weekend's game in the Northern Hemisphere. We've also got a few points and news stories to discuss, so if you love your rugby league, keep listening. As I mentioned, it was the first weekend of the Championships, and let's start with Championship 1, shall we? And Adrian, some big scorelines.
Yeah, notably the biggest scorelines were Keithley Cougars 66, London Scholars 6, Oldham 66, Gateshead Thunder 12, so a great start to the season for Keithley and Oldham. For London Scholars and Gateshead Thunder, it's back to the drawing board.
Yeah, and I suppose they were expected, weren't they? I mean, Keithley Cougars, they'll be expecting really to go up back at the first attempt, won't they, and get promotion again.
Well, as we mentioned in the podcast last week, I think Keithley Cougars are probably one of the favourites to be up straight away as the favourites to win the Championship 1. For London Scholars, it's still a work in progress for them. So it's a good learning curve for the London Scholars, but not the start to the season they were hoping for.
For me, though, the big game last weekend at Championship 1 level was over at Salford, where Swinton beat Workington by 22 points to 10. This was a real tough encounter, wasn't it, between two sides who were also expected to be at the top end of the table.
Steve McCormack's man are expected to be up there troubling Oldham and Keithley Cougars for the race to be promoted. They've invested heavily in the squad for 2011. There's a lot of youth and a lot of experience within that Swinton Lions team. Workington, they're obviously a team that are hoping to get back up to where they belong within the World of Rugby League, and they would have been hoping to have gone there and done a good job on Swinton Lions, but overall Swinton proving to be too strong for the men from Cumbria.
Now Whitehaven, they sit bottom of the table by virtue of the 9-point deduction, but they've already shaved 3 points off it. They beat Hornets by 30 points to 22, and a good win that really for Whitehaven, wasn't it?
It was, and that's despite Andy Saywell getting a very good hat trick. You always expect the hat trick hero to be on the winning side when he scores 3 tries. So we'd be disappointed, and so will John Stankovic, really, to be losing that to Whitehaven. But the dream start for Whitehaven, the quicker they get them minus points deducted and they're into the bonus, the plus points, the better it is for Whitehaven.
And also interesting that Craig Calvert scored a couple of tries. He's been running in tries for probably the last 5 or 6 years, hasn't he?
Yeah, Whitehaven through and through, isn't he? He's been there quite a while at Whitehaven. Prolific try scorer. And it's good for Whitehaven that they've got someone of his ability and experience still on board.
Now, South Wales Scorpions, they lost heavily to Dewsbury Rams last week in the Challenge Cup. And they would have been hoping for a better performance than what they came out with at Doncaster. Doncaster romping away with it, 40 points to 10. And you were picking Doncaster out as potentially a team which wouldn't really trouble the top of the table. And yet here they are, after one game, sitting third.
What can you say? Yes, really tearing the form book up, aren't they, with that big win against South Wales Scorpions. And the men from South Wales, bit disappointed with that, weren't they?
Yeah, I'm impressed with young Scott Spavin, though, over at Doncaster. 2 tries, 6 goals from him, 20 points. It's a good way to get your Championship 1 season up and running, isn't it?
It is, and that's what you're hoping to start off with. A bit of confidence, get off with a win, and you can kick on for the forthcoming season.
Mind you, if we're talking about point scoring feats, the Keithley Cougars centre Lawton, hat trick and 9 goals, 30 points. He almost beat London Scholars on his own, didn't he?
Indeed, got a few points.
Yeah, just to run through all those results from the first round of Cooperative Championship 1 action, Doncaster 40, South Wales 10, Keithley Cougars 66, London Scholars 6, Oldham 66, Gateshead Thunder 12, Swinton Lions 22, Workington Town 10, and Whitehaven 30. Hornets 22. Any surprises there, do you reckon?
I suppose the only surprise is Doncaster having such a big scoreline against South Wales Scorpions. Other than that, maybe all the other games went with the form book.
Okay, let's have a quick look at the Championship, and there were some burly big victories in this competition as well, wasn't there?
Big win at Sheffield for Widnes Vikings, wasn't there? 44-16, and I suppose the other big scoreline has got to be Batley Bulldogs defeating Dewsbury Rams 28-0. Carl Harrison, His eyes are doing smiling with that one.
I'll tell you what, I was quite surprised that Batley Bulldogs were able to beat Dewsbury by such a margin. Dewsbury have been running in the points lately. They've been having Dominic Brambani running things in the middle of the field, but he was up against it from the start, and Batley coming up with some excellent scores.
They were 10-0 up at half-time now. I don't know which way they were running in that second half. Were they running down the hill or up the hill? But it seems to work wonders for Batley Bulldogs on the first game of the season.
Priest, Walton, Hanforth, Lindsay and Williams scoring tries, with Moore kicking four goals in that 28-0 victory. Another team which scored 28 points was Hunslet Hawks. The thing is, their visitors, York City Knights, they also scored 28 points.
Cracking game of rugby league, really competitive, and it was end-to-end, wasn't it? The scoreline seemed to throw back and to left, right and centre during that game, and York City Knights, they'll be pleased to come away with a hard-earned point, certainly by scoring through Garside with 2 minutes to go.
I mean, Hunslet as well, they would have been kicking themselves because they were leading 20-4 at half-time. That's a winning position of any game, isn't it?
It is, and you'd expect to kick on from that from half-time, but whatever Dave Wood said to the boys at the half-time break, it worked wonders, and whatever he did say, I think he needs to bottle it and keep hold of it for the rest of the season.
Now, Thorman, he scored 54, or was it 56 points last week in the Cup. Found the points harder to come by for York this week.
Obviously going to be difficult for Chris Foreman to repeat that performance that he did produce last week in the Cup. Hunter Hawks obviously aware of the threat from Foreman, and I'm sure the message from the March brothers would have been to close him down at all costs.
The whole championship season got up and running last Thursday at the Lee Sports Village when the Centurions hosted Featherstone Rovers, and for me this was a comprehensive victory for Lee Centurions.
Lots mentioned about the Lee Centurions defence and how and pack as well, and how Emil was recruited for 2011, and I think the boys who were given the nod to play against Featherstone basically said to the world of the championship this season that the league going to be up there with the contenders, and Featherstone Rovers, and they'll be disappointed with what they produced during those 80 minutes. Never really got going, but having said that, Lee never allowed them to get into a game plan.
I mentioned Scott Spavin and Lawton for Doncaster and Keighley respectively. You can arguably say the same about Mick Nanning. Two tries, six goals. He's been there, he's done it. He's scored points at every level of rugby that he's playing, hasn't he? And it looks like he's set for another high-scoring season.
Yes, he's the ultimate points machine, is Mick Nanning. Wherever he's gone, always seems to know where the try line is. He's got his critics in his style of play. People say maybe he's a bit too laid back for the centre, but he's a big handful, isn't he? And when you give him the ball so close to the try line, you might as well say it's a certain try. It's very rare he gets pushed back over the whitewash, and his kicking just seems to get better as he gets older.
Another player who's a real regular scorer, and he's certainly proven into a very good acquisition, particularly for Widnes Vikings this season, is Steve Tyra. He's like mini Mick Nanning, isn't he? Two tries and six goals against Sheffield in what was ultimately a convincing victory for Widnes.
Yeah, Steve Tyra just seems to know where the try line is, and convincing style for the Vikings. He just can't stop scoring. Scored lots of tries for the Vikings during the Northern Rail Cup. Got a few tries and points against Siddle in that Challenge Cup tie as well. And he's certainly getting his career off with Widnes Vikings off to a great start.
Nine tries, and it was 24 goals before the game against Sheffield, so he's up to 30 goals for the season. He's going to be a man to stop, isn't he, at the top of those point scoring charts. I think this is going to be an interesting battle throughout the season between him and Nanning.
Without a doubt, I think Widnes are going to be difficult to stop during the season as well. They seem to have a lot of power at their disposal, certainly within the pack. There's lots of competition for placing, and Dennis Betts is slowly going about his job, isn't he? He's getting Widnes playing to a style that he expects him to play to, and it's a winning formula. That's what he's used to from his days at Wigan, and he'll be looking to have a big say during the season. Another hat-trick here for Widnes Vikings on Sunday was Dave Allen's second half hat-trick.
I was just going to mention Dave Allen because he was preferred really in the second row early on in the game, wasn't he? But he came on and certainly announced his arrival, really, if you like. He is club captain. He's already said that the Vikings are going to go unbeaten in 2011. He's got quite a lot to live up to, but the Vikings so far living up to it. Six games unbeaten now.
Yeah, bold statement to make, I've got to admit. But Widnes going about the job very nicely at the minute. First play to Sheffield Eagles, though, they never threw the towel in. They were really dominated by the Vikings during that game, but Sheffield just wouldn't give up.
I thought particularly first half, I mean, Sheffield, they only had about half a dozen opportunities to attack the Widnes line, and were unlucky to only score the two tries because they looked threatening every time they got inside the 20. But conversely, on the flip side, every time that Widnes got inside the other 20-metre line, they looked deadly as well.
I suppose a turning point in the game that really pushed it towards Widnes's favour was the try that was ruled out just bang on half-time. Me and you were at the game. We actually thought it was a try for Sheffield Eagles, but the referee, Mr. Lehay, ruled it out.
Yeah, it was Corey Hansen, I think, taking a crossfield kick. We thought he was onside. The referee thought otherwise. He's the man in the middle. He's nearer the action. But I still think it was a tough call. And then at the start of the second half, Sheffield committed the equivalent to rugby league suicide. They shot themselves in the foot by coughing up the ball early on in the tackle count, and Dave Allen scored his first try, and there was no looking back then for Widnes, was there?
No, Widnes too strong for Sheffield on the day and got the 3 points in the bag and getting themselves off to a winning start and also prevents Sheffield from getting the bonus point. But one big surprise has got to be in France on Saturday when Toulouse beat Halifax 26-12.
This was a great result for Toulouse for me. They scored tries through O'Leary, Cook, Corcoran and Wynn with Nichols. There was no Josh Lewis playing for them at the weekend and he's been a key component. Instead, Nichols took centre stage, kicked 5 goals from 5 attempts and just shows that he can kick goals as well as score tries. But I think that sounds a warning out to the rest of the championship that Toulouse, they're not going to be any easy beats.
Not at all, it's all about getting off to a good start in France against Toulouse, and when you're 14-0 down in the half-time breaking in, you allow the opposition to really get a real grip of the game and growing confidence. You're playing catch-up rugby league and you can't be doing that in France.
So let's just run through those cooperative championship results in full, shall we? It's Batley Bulldogs 28, Dewsbury Rams 0, Hunslet Hawks 28, York City Knights 28, Lee Centurions 36, Featherstone Rovers 10, Sheffield Eagles 16, Widnes Vikings 44, and Toulouse Olympique 26, Halifax 12, and no game for Barrow.
Yeah, weekend off for Barrow, so they can sit back, watch the action in round one, and then come back in round two, or round one for them, all guns blazing to get their season off to a winning start.
LoveRugbyLeague.com. From Super League and Championships to the NRL and amateur scene, we've got it covered. Let's just look towards the Super League. And in the Engage Super League, again, some really top games. The pick of my weekend here was the performance of Castleford Tigers to overcome a half-time deficit against Catalan Dragons and win that one by 34 points to 24.
Yeah, the youngsters at Castleford really getting off to a flying start, aren't they, in Super League? And they were pushed all the way by Catalan Dragons, but the Tigers at home had to really dig in deep and really work hard for the victory. And the turning point was when a Arundel went the length of the field and saw the Youngquest.
Yeah, there was certainly, I think the kick came over and it was one of those where it could have gone anywhere. Youngquest took it, set off right down the field. 90 metres later, he's under the posts. They've scored a try, Castleford Tigers. But for me, the real key thing about the way that Castleford have gone about their business early on this season has been the form of Jacob Emmett and also Craig Hubie in the front row. I think those two players in particular are really setting the standard for the rest to follow.
Good early start for them, isn't it? It's up to them now to really kick on from the start they've made and show to the watching public that these two young lads have got a big future within Super League.
They're the only team with a 100% record in Super League, but they aren't top of the table. It's Huddersfield Giants who hold that mantle. That's after dismantling Bradford Bulls by 50 points to 16. And Adrian, I wasn't expecting that.
Don't think anyone was. Mick Potter's men have started off really brightly in Super League so far this season. But for Huddersfield to rack up 50 points against a very strong Bradford team, it takes some doing. And Nathan Brown has been rather happy with the performance.
I mean, they got away to a glorious start, didn't they, Huddersfield? I think it was 18 points to nil before Bradford Bulls even had their hands on the ball.
That suggests that Bradford was still on the coach.
Yeah, most definitely. They could be searching for a new coach at that. Oh no, I'm not going to start the sack race again. Big win for Hull Kingston Rovers in what was Willie Mason's debut for the club.
He needed it as well. One coach was feeling the pressure a little bit was Justin Morgan. They went into that game after a couple of defeats and they were eager to get back to winning ways. The Crusaders, after a good start to the season with an early win, just seemed to have gone within themselves. They're really struggling for form, but it's always going to be difficult for any team at Craven Park against Hull Kingston Rovers. And when they get off to such a great start at 24-6 up at half-time, confidence is absolutely buzzing. And you can kick on from there and take the game to whatever standard or speed you want it to be, and that's what Rovers did.
You mentioned Craven Park. It's an intimidating atmosphere going to that place at the best of times, isn't it?
It is. The fans really are passionate up there, aren't they? And they're very vocal, the whole Kingston Rovers, and that seems to spur the home team on. It can be really be intimidating for any away team. So the big plan for any away team to get the points away from Rovers when you go there is to get off to a good start, which quietens the crowd.
Two tries there from Wellham, and he has started the season extremely well, hasn't he?
I like the look of this guy, Chris Wellham. He's been around Super League a few seasons now, but he certainly knows where the try line is. And as he's getting older, he's becoming a more mature player now.
We mentioned last week about Leeds Rhino struggling for form, but it would be fair to say they found it again against Salford City Reds. And that was after losing five front row forwards. They were five props short in their squad, and they've come away with a thumping victory, 46 points to 12.
If there was any ever a game that's going to test your squad out, this was it, wasn't it? You've got injuries galore all over the place. The key players, you're really weak in the pack. So Salford City Reds, they've seen those problems that Leeds have suffered off the field leading up to that game. They've been licking the lips at that one. They've fancied the chances to maybe cause a bit of an upset at Headingley Stadium. And at half-time, they were still in the game at 18-12. They were really competitive during that first half. But whatever was said during the half-time break, for Leeds Rhinos in that dressing room seemed to work wonders, because Leeds came back out and really took Salford apart.
Kevin Sinfield, his kicking has been a little bit off in the early part of the season, but it just shows you can't keep him quiet for too long, can you? 7 goals from him.
No, yeah, plenty of kicking opportunities as well, didn't he? So once he gets his eye in, as they say, he certainly knows where the H's are when it comes to conversions.
And we've mentioned about the Castleford youngsters. Leeds have got still one or two young players coming through, haven't they? Particularly Callum Watkins. He got over the scoreline again, didn't he?
He has, and he's got a big future as Callum Watkins, only about 19, I think. And he must have a good talent around him to force his way into Leeds Rhino's team on a regular basis. He just isn't in there because he's got injuries. He's in there because he's good enough to be there.
We talked a little bit about St Helens last week, didn't they? And about the move that they've had to the Stobart Stadium, Halton. They're still waiting the first Super League points from that venue, because they got really put in their place, to be honest, by Harlequins.
Impressive start to the season by Harlequins. Everyone's surprised that they started so well. I think I was one of them people as well. But they've got off to a great start, haven't they? And to go to Leeds and win, and then get a great victory against St Helens on the road as well, suggests that Harlequins have got more in the locker than what everyone up here thinks they've got down in London. But Rob Purden's men have gone about the job, and they're really not just ground up the results, but they've won in sensational style as well. And St Helens have got some work to do.
Well, they blasted down the door, didn't they, Harlequins, leading 20 points to nil at half time. Tries from Dawn, Price, Club, and Kouperatsas. And you can tell I've been trying to practice that pronunciation.
I just call him Nick the Greek.
Gale kit 5 goals and a drop goal. And in reply, St Helens, they did come back in the second half with tries from Graham, Roby and Melly, but it was never going to be enough, and against the tenacious Harlequins.
Yeah, it was all in vain for St Helens, wasn't it? Too late for St Helens to turn that deficit around, the damage done at half time.
Over at Wakefield Wildcats, well, they're a club that's never been far away from the headlines since the start of the season, and for me, this was a game that was really low on quality against Warrington, and surprisingly so, really.
Yeah, they were full of effort, weren't they? I mean, they had a team that have got all kinds of problems going on, so you can see where the players' thoughts maybe wavered somewhere else as it is, but they really dug in Wakefield. They weren't up to the standard of what Warrington produced, but they dug in, they were full of effort, and they pushed Warrington all the way. Having said that, wasn't a classic performance from Warrington Wolves, but the boys went out there and got the job done. And more interestingly, that everyone's picking up upon, is the fact there was only one overseas player in the starting 17, that was David Solomona.
Yeah, he had a good game as well, David Solomona, didn't he? He was getting the ball away quite regularly, as he does. But for me, I thought Warrington should have been a little bit more convincing than that eventual scoreline. Early tries from Riley and Bridge suggested that it was going to be a walk in the park, but Wakefield came back at them and made things difficult, didn't they?
They did, and like I said, fair play to Wakefield. They really made Warrington work hard for that victory. And the youngsters for Warrington as well. Don't forget, Warrington have got a few injuries, and there's some big guns missing from that Warrington lineup. So maybe Wakefield would have looked at the Warrington lineup before the game, and sure, John Kerr would have been fancying his chances to get a victory, but it weren't to be for Wakefield. Plenty of effort, plenty of huff and puff, but Warrington just had a little bit too much class about them during those 80 minutes to get the victory. And at one stage, well, Warrington were top, but it's changed hands three times in the league this weekend.
Just shows how competitive Super League is, doesn't it? And it was an ultimately competitive game, perhaps for the wrong reasons, over at Wigan, who fought back from a 12-4 deficit to claim both points against Hull FC by 14 points to 12.
Games are always won and lost on turning points, and the big turning point has got to be for Hull FC. Wigan knocked the ball on in two sets of attacks close to their try line, and Hull FC were awarded a penalty, weren't they? And it was the hooker, Danny Horton, wanted to tap it and go for the try, knowing that if they got the try, Hull FC would have been out of sight at 14-4, possibly 16-4 up. But as it was, it weren't to be for them. It was overruled. Then they wanted to go for the 2 points to make it 12-4. Danny Horton throws the ball in disgust and walks away shaking his head. And you can imagine, at the end of that game, knowing they've lost 14-12, he would have had the peace on that.
He would have been vindicated, really, wouldn't he? But Wigan Warriors, they just show that they're a tenacious side, aren't they? I mean, they probably weren't at the best against Hull FC, but they've come away with the points. A couple of tries there from young Josh Charnley.
Man with a big reputation, it's growing week by week, isn't it?
And for me, Ryan Hoffman's turned into a very good buy, really, for Wigan, isn't he? The overseas second rower.
Yeah, came with a big reputation, didn't he, did Hoffman? Rather than shouting the odds like Willie Mason has about what he's going to do and what he wants to do, Ryan Hoffman's just going about his business rather quietly.
He's letting his rugby do the talking, isn't
he? Exactly.
I suppose that's the way it's always got to be. Come and join in with our Fantasy Rugby League competition. loverugbyleague.com. What does that mean to the table? Well, I alluded to it before. Huddersfield Giants top with a point difference of 56. 8 points and four victories from the first five games. Then it's Castleford Tigers, Warrington Wolves and Harlequins, the top four. Making up the rest of the top eight, Wigan, Leeds, St Helens and Hull KR. And it's all the usual suspects in the bottom half of the table, isn't it, really?
Yeah, Bradford Hull FC, Castleland Dragons, Salford City Reds, Crusaders and Wakefield still on minus points, minus two each.
Any particular highlights for you this weekend from the Super League action, Adrian?
Obviously, the big highlight has got to be the victory for Harlequins, 27-16 against St Helens. Takes some doing. I mean, people might say St Helens may not have been at the best, but you've still got to be at your best to beat St Helens, and Harlequins are proving that they can back the results up.
Surprisingly, no hat-tricks to talk about in Super League this week. Normally, we look through the papers on a Monday, don't we? Looking for those players who's grabbed all the headlines. But a good spread of tries, really, amongst the players this week.
One or two players have got two tries, haven't they, for their clubs? But no hat-trick heroes to say.
Now, it has been requested of us here on the loverugbyleague.com podcast to mention perhaps a little bit about what's going on in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, I have to admit, I don't profess to be an expert on Southern Hemisphere Rugby League, but it was the first round of the NRL season this past weekend, and again, some fairly interesting results to speak of. New Zealand Warriors 18, Parramatta Eels 24, Brisbane Broncos losing against their Queensland rivals, North Queensland, by 14 points to 16, Sydney Roosters bringing up 40 points against South Sydney, who scored 29. Melbourne Storm 18, Manly Sea Eagles 6. Canberra Raiders with a thumping 40 points to 12 win over Cronulla Sharks. Gold Coast Titans losing out to St George Illawarra Dragons 25-16. Penrith Panthers 8, Newcastle Knights 42. And Canterbury Bulldogs 24, West Tigers 14. Anything there to whet your appetite, Adrian?
Yeah, one game that stands out for me is New Zealand Warriors against Parramatta Eels. The Parramatta team had to hold off a late revival by New Zealand Warriors to get that victory, giving Stephen Kearney his first victory in his first coaching job in the NRL.
I wonder what he must have been thinking, because, I mean, he's been coaching New Zealand, hasn't he? And to suddenly come up against all his countrymen in the opposition dugout felt a bit strange to the coach.
Without a doubt, it would have been a bit strange for him, because he would have known a lot of them players. He picked them for the international team, hasn't he? So maybe that gave him a bit of advantage for the Parramatta team, because he would have been have a lot of inside information about certain weaknesses, about certain players, and it seems to work wonders for Parramatta. But third party to New Zealand Warriors, they made a fight back of it, but they just weren't good enough on the night.
A surprising loss for Brisbane Broncos at home in their first game as well. Jonathan Thurston, inspiring North Queensland Cowboys.
Yeah, officially the co-captain of the Cowboys, isn't he, along with Matt Scott, but Thurston showing on Friday night that he's the man who's going to be calling the shots for him this season.
LoveRugbyLeague.com for all your rugby league needs. What talking points have we got coming up for the rest of the show? Well, certainly one of the talking points that I want to raise is what was a fiery game, really, and the aftermath of it between Wigan and Hull, because four players, they've been charged and will face the disciplinary. You've got Joel Tompkins and Sam Tompkins, who'll face it from the Wigan side. And in the black and white corner, and literally it was at certain points of that game, Kurt Yeaman and Lee Radford. Now, certainly Radford, he's no stranger to that disciplinary committee, is he?
It was a very physical contest, wasn't it, between Wigan and Hull FC. The referee, he was very busy, wasn't he, blowing his whistle. And Rich Dagar has actually commented on the referee's performance. He weren't too impressed with it. Maybe he's trying to deflect away the fact that Hull FC lost the perfect opportunity to get the second victory of the season in Super League.
You picked out an interesting point last week, Adrian, when we mentioned about Willie Mason being unveiled over at Hull Kingston Rovers. I think at the time when we last met up and we were talking the podcast, he hadn't actually been unveiled to the public, but he said some things, and now he's got to back it up, hasn't he?
He has, because obviously there's a lot of expectation around Willie Mason by Hull Kingston Rovers, to say the least. He's a man with a big reputation, so the spotlight is going to be on Willie Mason week in, week out, isn't it, really? And he made one or two comments which would have really miffed a couple of our more established Super League stars over here. So they'll be looking to aim for Willie Mason. I'm sure every game Mason plays, he will become a bit of a target.
Now, the last player that did something like this and shouted his mouth off in public early doors was Mark Carroll. Do you remember when he came across playing for London Broncos a few years ago? And he said basically he was going to rip it up in Super League over here, and ended up at the end of the season heading off back down under with his tail tucked firmly between his legs.
Without a doubt. So it's always dangerous to call the shots before the action started. That's why I like the boy Hoffman at Wigan. He could have done exactly the same, but he hasn't. He's gone about his job quietly. And maybe that's what Willie Mason should have done.
Follow us on Twitter. Love Rugby League. The other point that I want to sort of discuss something about here, Adrian, is all about the use of old players. Certainly it's something that in Australia, they do it well, don't they? They seem to keep old players involved, be it in talk shows, be it on commentary teams, be it, you know, out on the after dinner circuit. Over here, whilst there is an after dinner circuit, so to speak, you don't tend to get that many rugby league players who still seem to be involved. They don't seem to be quite as attached to the game over here for some reason.
There are a few players, former players, that I know of who are on the after dinner circuit, but it does seem to be very low key, whereas in Australia and other sports as well, it seems to be more high profile with them guys that are still within, but involved in the game. But there are still former players involved in rugby league. It's just very low key. A lot of fans are not aware of it. And maybe it's something the NFL need to look at. Maybe still have former players involved in some role within the game, just to maybe act as ambassadors and raise the profile a little bit more.
Because let's face it, you know, if I suppose he's a player of my generation, but I'd be very interested to hear what Ellery Hanley would have to say about various things. You need players like him or ex-players like him to get back involved in the sport, don't you?
It all depends whether Ellery Hanley wants to talk about rugby league.
I suppose that's true, that, yeah. But, I mean, you was at quite an interesting event on Sunday night, wasn't you, involving snooker, another sport, and Steve Davis.
Yes, it was. I was at the luckily enough to be at the World Championship qualifiers, watching a local snooker player, Andrew Higginson. And it's interesting to see two former world number ones in the qualifying stages. But at that stage in Sheffield, notably Steve Davis was one of them, and then Ken Doherty was the other one. I did question, why are these people still involved in the game? I was given back the answer, Steve Davis does it just for the good of the game, because he knows by him being there, it's going to attract people towards them tournaments to go and watch him play. And surprisingly, there was a few ardent Ken Doherty and Steve Davis fans in the audience who were just specifically there to watch them two play a game of snooker.
Now, I know it's a different sport entirely, but I think that rugby league can learn something from that. I don't know about you.
Without a doubt, I'm sure they can do, but how do you incorporate that? How do you try and incorporate that within the game? Well, that's down to the marketing men, but there's certainly a gap in the market there where they should maybe get the high-profile former players who are not involved in the game back on board and have them doing some promotional work.
I mean, one player I would like to see back, he was a very highly respected forward during his time, Kevin Ward, the ex-St Helens and Castleford player. Wonderful pair of hands on him. Isn't involved and hasn't been involved really since he broke his leg in such terrible style, which ended his playing days.
If you look at Sky Sports, even though Kevin Ward was a great player, a lot of the new fans probably won't know who Kevin Ward is, so even only the old fans would know who Kevin Ward is. But there are still former players involved in commentary teams, because if you look at Sky Sports, they've got Steve-O, who's obviously a throwback from the 70s. You've got Terry O'Connor, you've got Brian Carney, you've got Brian McDermott, you've got Phil Clark. So there are former players involved within the game on Sky Sports. But if you look at the BBC, you only ever seem to reel out Jonathan Davis.
Yeah, I mean, nothing against Jonathan Davis. He's a very knowledgeable fella. And, you know, he obviously knows a lot about rugby and rugby league. But, yeah, I'm sort of with you on this one. Can they not find someone who's a little bit more modern? I'd like to hear what Tommy Martin had to say about the game, for example. Follow us on Facebook, loverugbyleague.com. I've got three more points that I want to raise before we finish for this edition of Talking Points. The first one being this whole schmozzle, if you like, at Hull Kingston Rovers, because currently Michael Dobson, who's been the fulcrum and who everything has run through for the last couple of seasons, he's been allowed to be deregistered by the Robins so that they can sign Willie Mason.
Yes, you're right. He's been deregistered. So at the minute, as we stand, Michael Dobson's a free agent. So if any Super League club are looking for a halfback, now's the chance to maybe go in and snatch him from under the noses of Huggins and Rovers. I mean, bearing in mind Dobson's out injured for a while, so you're going to have to wait a few weeks or a month or so to get him back on board playing for you. But they've actually deregistered him so they can play Willie Mason, who's on a Tongan passport.
It's an interesting loophole, though, isn't it?
It is an interesting loophole, but according to the RFL, it's been done before. Wigan did it a few years ago. So Hull Kingston Rovers are within the rules of the game, to be honest, that they can do that one. Raising a few issues, I don't see how clubs can, one, sign a player on your Super League salary cap and then decide to deregister him. So is Dobson's wages still on the salary cap for Hull Kingston Rovers?
Oh, answers any accountants to the loverugbyleague.com podcast. It has been done before, though, and I certainly recall Warrington doing something similar, because didn't they deregister Graham Apple many moons ago? Was that around the same time as they brought Andrew Johns in, or was that a season after?
You might be right on that one. I'm not too sure. I'm not 100% sure, but it has been done before. I know Wigan have done it before. You might be right with Warrington as well, but I think it's a loophole the clubs need, or certainly RFL, the governing body, need to close that one up. I think if you've been signed on a contract, you shouldn't be allowing clubs the opportunity to deregister a player just because you want to bring a certain overseas player over.
Have you visited our new live score service? Everyone's talking about it. LoveRugbyLeague.com. We mentioned it last week when we went through Steve McNamara's international setup for the forthcoming season. But it's a real bee in my bonnet, so I thought I'd raise it again. And I just can't get this into my head about players switching allegiances between countries. It doesn't rankle with me, really. I don't understand it. You've got Rhys Evans, who's coming through well at Warrington, interviewed after a game, saying that, I mean, this is a lad who's from Bridge End, remember. He's certainly more Welsh than a dandelion or a daffodil. But he's pledging his allegiance to England, and I can't understand that. I can't get that through my head.
Well, if he has done that, it doesn't really help the game in Wales, does it? Wales need to keep as many of the talented players on board and to be able to be strong enough to compete with the likes of England. So to be losing players of his ability to go and play for England when he should be playing for Wales makes the job even harder to establish rugby league within Wales, because to establish rugby league, it's not just a case of having a strong Super League team or a decent Championship team in South Wales. You've also got to have a good international team, and if you're losing your better players, say England, what's the point in having an international team? I don't see the point of it. The latest saga as well is with Scotland. They've based their team for the World Cup that's coming up around Danny Brough, and he's decided, well, actually, I'm not going to play for you, I want to play for England.
I don't think you should be allowed to do it. I think they should close that off straight away. Now, an interesting thing from down under is the fact that they're mooting about an England side going touring before the World Cup down in the Southern Hemisphere. But instead of playing your likes of your Tonga and your Papua New Guinea and whatever, you play a Pacific Nations team, which means that nobody has to decide that they're not representing anybody.
So it's like a combined team of like, all them nations.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's it's an interesting point, but still, I don't agree with it. I think once you've made your mind up, you shouldn't be able to change your colours.
Not at all. I think once you play the game for a country, that should be it now, really. It should be, if you decide to play for Tonga, that's who you play for, and vice versa, all around the world. It's the only way you'll get a strong international game within rugby league, because if you've got players swapping and changing their minds where they want to play, well, it's no good for the progress of international rugby league.
And think back to the last World Cup as well. You've got Hayne, the fullback, who is now in the Australian squad. He represented Fiji, didn't he? And all that groundwork and all the good things which came from that World Cup for Fiji, they got a real good squad of players there. If they're all deciding this World Cup, we can't be bothered playing for Fiji, we're going to stick our hand in to play for New Zealand, for example, or for Tonga. As you mentioned, what's the point in going through and actually getting a team and inviting them to play in the World Cup?
Well, the nations like Tonga and Fiji and Papua New Guinea seem to have the same trouble and problem that Ireland, Scotland and Wales seem to have. They bring these players on, they give them the opportunity to play International Rugby League, and then because they want to play for the more glamorous team, they're left with the quality going away. It's not good. It's not good for the international game within them countries, and it makes the job hard for the federations to show it, to get the people interested to watch it.
Follow us on Facebook, loverugbyleague.com. Let me quickly go through the forthcoming fixtures in the world of rugby league. And on Wednesday, Whitehaven host Halifax in the final group game of the Northern Rail Cup. Thursday, the Cooperative Championship sees York City Knights host Sheffield Eagles. On Friday, we've got Super League action from Crusaders versus Catalan Dragons, Huddersfield Giants against Wigan Warriors, which is the TV game, Hull FC take on Wakefield Trinity Wildcats, Salford City Reds host Hull Kingston Rovers. On Saturday, the other engaged Super League TV game is Leeds Rhinos taking on St Helens, whilst in the Cooperative Championship, Barrow hosts Leigh Centurions. And please note, there's an earlier kickoff time. It's actually getting underway there at Barrow at 5:30, not 6:30, as it's been printed in the various rugby league medias. Also taking place on Saturday evening, Dewsbury Rams, they host Toulouse Olympique. And on Sunday in Super League, it's Bradford hosting Castleford, Warrington taking on Harlequins, and the Cooperative Championship throws up Featherstone against Batley Bulldogs, Widnes Vikings host Hunslet Hawks, and in Championship 1, it's Gateshead versus Keighley, London Scholars against Doncaster, Rochdale Hornets take on Swinton Lions, South Wales Scorpions host Whitehaven, and Workington Town are at home to Oldham. Wherever you are this weekend, enjoy your rugby.
We live the game, we love the game. LoveRugbyLeague.com.
My final point for this particular show is going to be about the Conference National. And I said that I'd give this club a mention. It's the Valley Cougars. Now, they're a club from Wales. They've done quite well in the Welsh Conference for the last couple of seasons. They've been promoted. They're in the Conference National that houses such clubs as Dewsbury Celtic, Kippax Knights, Featherstone Lions, and, of course, Warrington Wizards. And we were fortunate enough to be at the grand final of this competition last year, weren't we, when Warrington Wizards took on Huddersfield Underbank?
Yeah, Warrington Wizards are the champions of that one, and they'll be looking to make it all the way to the Halliwell Jones again, won't they? So they'll be one of the favourites to maybe go all the way, but it'll be interesting to see how the Valley Cougars go in that competition, and it'll give you an idea, if they do well, just what the quality is like in the Welsh Conference League.
Now, certainly the first three games of the season for the Cougars, well, they face two tough away games. Coming up on the 23rd of April is a game away at Dewsbury Celtic. The following week, the 30th of April, they travel to Kippax to face the Kippax Knights. And then they only host their first game on the 7th of May against Featherstone Lions. Now, I suppose the two games which they'll be looking forward to, a lot of people will take interest in those, will be coming up on the 21st of May, when Valley Cougars have to travel to Warrington Wizards, who we've just mentioned, and on the 23rd of July, when they actually host the Wizards back in Wales.
Yeah, two interesting games, aren't they, to play the opposition. They can get a win against the Wizards in Warrington. That'll raise the profile of the Cougars in South Wales. They'll be hoping on the return leg back down there in the Valley is that they might get a few people more interested in how they go about it and maybe get some more media interest.
And certainly with the talk of the championships being developed over coming years, a club like Valley Cougars will probably have ultimate aims of actually getting in the championships, won't they?
It'll help rugby league in Wales full stop, won't it? Certainly in South Wales. I mean, you've got South Wales Scorpions who are in the championship one, but a strong Valley Cougars team, well, that's going to widen the net to attract more players from, dare I say, rugby union.
And we're hearing good things already about the development work that's going on in North Wales as well. They're trying to basically replicate all the development work which is going on in South Wales. There's a couple of teams who's been allowed into the under-18s competition.
Yeah, I know a lot of people don't really like the fact that the Crusaders were able to set up base and get a franchise in the south of Wales, in Bridgend, and then halfway through that franchise decided to, well, we don't actually want to be in South Wales, we're going to move up to North Wales. One or two people who support the game weren't really impressed by what they saw, what was going on in Wales with the Crusaders. But if they can do some groundwork at grassroots level and raise the profile within the schools wherever they're going to be based, it's only good for the game, isn't it? They've already done it in South Wales. The profile of rugby has gone through the roof in South Wales since the Crusaders were formed in Bridgend. And if they can do the same work in Wrexham, it's all for the good.
LoveRugbyLeague.com for all your rugby league needs.
That's just about all that we've got time for on this edition of Talking Points. But join us next time. My thanks again to Adrian Jackson. I'm sure you'll be here again next week, won't you?
I'm sure I will.